about her disappearance. When Nate asked why, Dominika told him about Ustinov. When Nate asked how, she told him about her training. Those rumors about State School 4, he thought. Jesus. She looked at him then, trying to gauge his reaction on hearing she'd been to Sparrow School. There was no pity, no disdain. His eyes met hers. He was always that way. The purple mantle around his head pulsated. She wanted desperately to trust him. He poured her another glass. "What do you need?" he asked in English. "I want to help you." She ignored the question, switched to English. "I know you're not an American diplomat working in your embassy's economic section. I know you're a CIA officer. You know very well that I work in the Residentura in my embassy as an officer of our state security. At least you should have realized it when I told you Volontov was my chief. I suppose you also know my uncle is Vanya Igorov, first deputy director of the service." Nate tried not to move. "In Moscow after the AVR, I worked in the 5th Department in an operation against a French diplomat. It was unsuccessful. Then I was assigned to Helsinki." Dominika looked up at Nate. Her face was puffy. She looked at him searchingly, and he reached out and held her hand. It felt cold to the touch. "Marta was my friend. She served loyally all her life. They gave her medals, a pension, an overseas posting. She was strong, independent. She had no regrets about her life. She enjoyed everything. In the time I knew her, she showed me who I am." She squeezed Nate's hand slightly. "I don't know what happened to Marta, but she's gone, without a word, and I know she's dead. She never did anything to them. My uncle is afraid of exposure. He would protect himself. There's a man, a Koshmar, a nightmare creature who belongs to my uncle. He would use him for such a thing." "Are you in danger?" asked Nate. His thoughts were racing. She was talking about past operations, a political assassination, liquidation of one of their own personnel, scandal at the top of the SVR. She was dictating at least half a dozen intel reports right there, from the couch. He didn't dare take notes. He had to keep her rolling. "You were involved in the Ustinov affair," said Nate, "so your uncle may be nervous about you." She shook her head. "My uncle knows I cannot hurt him. My mother is in Moscow. He uses her as a zalojnika, a hostage, like in the old days. Besides, he trained me, put me through school, sent me abroad. I'm as much his creature as that monster of his. I was sent to Helsinki to meet you, to develop a friendship with you," Dominika said. "My uncle says he considers me one of his operations officers, but he looks at me as his little sparrow, right out of the 1960s. They've been impatient with the progress I have been making with you. They want to hear how I took you to bed."
"I'm willing to help you there," said Nate.
She stared back at him and sniffled thinly. "You are pleased to continue joking," she said. "Perhaps you will not think it is so funny when I tell you that I'm supposed to find out about your former activities in Moscow, about the mole you meet. Uncle Vanya sent me to watch you, to see if you become operational, active, like you did for 2 weeks last month."
"The mole you meet."
Nate felt like the child standing beside the tracks as a fast freight roars by, inches from being swept away. He tried not to react, but he knew Dominika saw it in his face. "I did not say anything to that slug Volontov," said Dominika. "Marta was still alive then. She knew what I had decided." Nate was trying to concentrate on her words while numbly contemplating the close call with Marble. They had had no idea of the danger. Dominika's decision not to report most probably saved his life. "Since I bumped into you at the swimming pool, I was trying to establish a friendship with you," said Dominika. "In many ways, we were doing the same thing to each other. I know you were trying to identify my weaknesses, my, what is the word, vulnerability. Your charming pursuit ensured only that we would spend more time together. I suppose that was Uncle Vanya's plan all along. What surprised me was that I continued to let you work on me because
It dawned on me. I wanted you to continue to work on me. I liked being with you. Nate sat motionless, still holding her hand. Jesus Christ, she had been working him, just like Gable thought. The SVR were hunting for marble. Thank God she had decided the way she had. And, thought Nate, God bless Marta, wherever she was. He knew Dominica was already out of the starting gate, the critical stage. Her flat voice was a distillate of anger, fear, her desire to lash out. She had already told him enough to cook her three times over. Now came the infinitely delicate moment when she would pull back and go away, or she would make the decision that she would become a CIA source. Dominica, he said, I already told you I wanted to help you. I already asked you what you needed. What do you want to do? Dominica took her hand out of his, her cheeks flushed. I don't regret anything, she said. I know you don't, said Nate. There was no sound in the room. What do you want to do? He asked softly. It was as if she could read his mind. You're very clever, aren't you, Mr. Nash? She said. I came here to cry on your shoulder, to tell you about my mission against you, to tell you I helped you. I am grateful for all that, said Nate, not wanting to show how scandalously relieved he was. Dominica could see it in his face nonetheless. But you're not asking me to work with you to avenge Marta, nor to get back at my uncle or Volontov or the rest of them, nor to try to reform my beloved country. I don't have to tell you any of that, he said. Of course you don't, she said. You're too careful for that. Nate looked at her without saying anything. All you do ask me is what I want to do. That's right, said Nate. Instead, suppose you tell me what you want me to do. I think we should begin working together, stealing secrets, said Nate immediately, his heart in his mouth. For revenge, for Marta, for Rodina, for... No, none of those, interrupted Nate. Gable's words came into his head. Dominica looked at him. His purple halo had spread like the rays of the rising sun. Because you need it, Dominica Igorova. Because it helps you feed that temper of yours. Because it'll be something you own for once in your life. Dominica stared at him. His eyes were steady, open. That's a very interesting thing to say, she said. The best recruitments are the ones where the agents recruit themselves, his instructor had bellowed at the farm. Remember that, no surprises, a natural evolution, he had said. Well, this was hardly a natural evolution of the phased recruitment. Nate felt as though he had just run Class 4 Rapids in a bathtub. It was an hour later, and Dominica had never actually uttered, "Yes, I will do it." No agent makes the decision with a handshake and a signature. Instead, Nate just got her to start talking about it. He had told her, "Whatever you decide, I promise we will work safely," which is the standard catechism when addressing agents. You mean it, but everyone, case officer and agent alike, knows that long-term survival for an agent, especially inside Russia, is unlikely. But the bland comment got a reaction. To do this work correctly, we cannot avoid risks. We both know that, said Dominica archly. She said we, thought Nate. And we'll start slowly, carefully, if we decide to start at all, he said. Exactly, said Dominica, if we decide. And we'll proceed as quickly or as slowly as you want, said Nate. Your side can examine my motivatia at their leisure. If our collaboration turns out to be unsatisfactory, I will tell you and we will agree to the okonchanie, the termination of our relationship. They apparently had the same agent handling Kant in the SVR. She was through the first stage. It was getting late. Dominica stood and reached for her coat. Nate helped her, watching her eyes, the corners of her mouth, her hands. Was this going to stick? They stood looking at each other for a moment. She turned to him at the door, offered her hand. He took it and said, Spokojnoj noci, good night, and she left quickly, making no sound in the stairwell. After Dominika left his apartment, Nate stayed up, jotting notes, remembering what she had told him. He resisted the idiotic urge to walk to the embassy, wake up the station, begin writing cables to headquarters. Recruitment, SVR officer, Sparrow Cadre, her uncle runs the whole outfit, assassinations, it's a spy movie for Christ's sake. He couldn't wait to get into the station tomorrow. His high spirits evaporated. He tossed in bed, throwing the bedclothes off. The Dead Sea fruit turned to ashes in his mouth. He had to secure the recruitment, make sure of her commitment. She could back out, a lot of agents did. When he put her in harness, he'd have headquarters breathing down his neck. What's her motivation? How much salary? What's her access? What do you mean she didn't sign a secrecy agreement? This was very sudden. Is she a provocation? Production. They were going to want results, fast. They would ask first for the best information she could get, and that would be dangerous. The little men in the offices with the little beady eyes would want to validate her as a bona fide asset. Everything would be a test. They would not be satisfied until her information was corroborated, until she was boxed, passed a polygraph. Push her too hard or push in the wrong direction and they'd lose her. Nate knew that. And if he lost her after claiming a recruitment, there would be the knowing looks from headquarters. Case was bogus from the start. That was just the beginning. If Dominika was caught, the SVR would kill her. It didn't matter how she was caught. A mole in headquarters, a mistake in handling, hostile surveillance, or simply bad luck. The lights coming on with her standing in front of an open safe drawer with a rollover camera. Nate turned over in bed. There would be an interrogation and a trial, but they wouldn't care about the facts. Uncle Vanya wouldn't save her. They'd walk her barefoot and wearing a prison smock to the basement of the Lubyanka or Lefortovo or Butorkia. They'd push her down the hallway lined with chipped steel doors into the room with a drain and the sloping floor, and the hooks and the ceiling beams, and the stapled wax cardboard coffin standing upright in the corner of the room. They'd shoot her behind the right ear, even before she was halfway into the room, no warning. And they'd look at her, lying face down on the floor before picking her up, wrists and ankles, and dropping her into the cardboard coffin. That simple, that final. Rogan Josh. In a mortar, roughly grind chopped onions, ginger, chili, cardamom, clove, coriander, paprika, cumin, and salt into a smooth paste. Add bay and cinnamon. Add heated clarified butter. Cook until fragrant. Add cubed pieces of lamb, stir in yogurt, warm water, and pepper. Bake in medium oven for 2 hours. Sprinkle with coriander. Chapter 17. The recruitment of Dominika was not in any sense normal. She was a trained intelligence officer, but she now had to learn how to become a spy. It wasn't a natural transformation. Cement the bond, Forsyth had said. Station's first move, therefore, was to make extremely discreet inquiries into the whereabouts of Marta to demonstrate their concern. Gable arranged a meeting with a cooperative liaison officer from Supo. No trace of the Russian woman. The security video of a possible crossing at Haparanta was inconclusive. A tearless Dominika thanked Nate for trying. They kept the bigot list way down, the registered tally of officers cleared to read into the operation, though they couldn't do much about the headquarters end. The case was already in restricted handling channels, which was bullshit, said Gable, because only about 100 people read the cables. They still tried to limit distribution. Forsyth and Gable had done this before, knew the more carefully they started the case, the longer the intel stream would last. Nate felt his resolve building. Protect her at all costs. Do not fail. Do not fail her. Nate found a two-bedroom along the Ramsey Strand in the Marina Inlet, and the rat-faced NOC came back and rented it for 12 months as a Dane, a business flat. he'd be coming and going at all times. The gratified landlord couldn't have cared less. A night of spring rain, headlights reflecting on the pavement. Dominica was backlighted as she stepped off the green and yellow number 4 trolley. Nate caught up to her after 2 blocks, put his arm in hers. Not even a hello, in strict SVR operative mode. Back straight, nervous. Her first safe house meeting as an agent, grappling not so much with fear as she was with the shame. They walked wordlessly down narrow lanes behind apartment blocks, silver light from the television game shows in all the windows. They hurried through the main door, cooking smells, boiled reindeer and cream sauce, up 2 flights, walking quietly. The first night of the rest of their lives. A couple of lamps on and Gable was waiting and crowded her, took her coat. Dominica could not stop looking at Gable's wire brush hair. She liked his look, his eyes, the purple behind them. Another solid Porpilnia, she thought. Forsythe came out of the kitchen, glasses up on his forehead, wrestling with a cork. Elegant, wise, calm, the air around him was azure. Lazurnish. He would be sensitive. Dominica sat on the couch and looked at the 3 men moving around the room. They were natural, unaffected, yet they looked at her and she knew she was being assessed. She knew it was for real with them in the room, filling it up. Nate was a young officer, all she had known of the CIA up till now, but these other men were calm, serious, you could feel the years, like General Korchnoi back home. Then Gable raised a glass and massacred Zdroya, and Dominica suppressed a smile, stayed serious and correct. No business tonight, that's how good they were. Just talk, and they let Nate do most of the talking. That was how good they were. And they listened and heard everything. At the end, she left first. Standard tradecraft for them too, she registered, and walked along the strand. Not all the boats were in the spring water yet, and she didn't feel ashamed like before. That was how good they had been. The second meeting, Dominica had time to look around. The galley kitchen had a 2-ring cooktop, enough to boil water, and a refrigerator with rubber trays to squeeze the ice cubes out of. In the nature of furnished safe houses, the couch and chairs and tables were thin and cheap and garish, avocado and harvest gold. Still the rage in Scandinavia, said Gable. The cheap prints on the wall were crashing waves and elk in moonlight. The throws on the floor were straight Lapland. One bedroom had a double bed that touched the wall on either side, and you'd have to crawl onto it over the footboard. The second bedroom was empty, save for a hanging fixture of bright red glass. The bathroom had a tub and the requisite bidet, which Gable one night mistook for the toilet, and Dominica had tears in her eyes and started calling Gable Bratok, dear brother, from then on. Running a trained intelligence officer as an agent is more difficult than directing a sweaty banker desperate for the Euros because he's got King Kong for a wife, a 2-year-old BMW, and Godzilla for a mistress. Dominica was an AVR grad. They argued wryly over tradecraft. I cannot believe you think this is a suitable site. Or security. No, Dommy, the rug on the railing when it's safe. Didn't they teach you positive signals? Nate wondered how many times he had to say, let's do it my way, and cringed every time she said dramatically to get under his skin, it is my head if you're wrong. The CIA men quickly recognized that Dominica had extraordinary intuition. She finished their sentences, nodded quickly at discreet suggestions, had an uncanny sense of when to listen. An intelligent woman trained as an intelligence officer, thought Forsythe, but there was something else he had never seen before. Clairvoyance was the wrong word, but it was close. A part of Dominica watched the process from afar. She saw how they respected her, valued her training, yet took nothing for granted. She knew they were testing her in little ways. Sometimes they deferred to her, other times they insisted on doing it their way. They were very thorough, she thought. The weekly meetings at the safe house, her work with them, all began defining her. The torment of the decision forgotten, Her recruitment by the CIA became the burning gemstone in her brain. She walked around with it, savored it. It was especially sweet when talking to Voluntov. "Can you guess what I'm doing?" she thought as the sweaty resident droned on about her work. Nate had been right. This was something she owned, hers alone. Forsythe came back when it was time to discuss with infinite care what secrets Dominica could steal from the Residentura. They built the igloo, big blocks on the bottom, starting with what papers she personally handled, then what she could safely steal, then what treasures she knew existed but didn't have access to. They told her to take it easy. Trained spooks as agents always initially push too hard, try to do too much. Dominica asked whether they would give her a camera and camo gear. She wanted to show them how much ice and edge she had, but it only rang bells in the CIA men's heads. Dominica saw their faces and their halos change and understood she had made a misstep. "Let's talk about equipment a little later," Forsythe said, and wrote a cable the next day asking for an examiner. They might as well get it over with. Polygraph. The flutter. Nate sat in the little bedroom listening to the muffled voices from the living room, one deep, the other sweet. Dominica was in a white ash chair, answering yes or no to a thick-fingered examiner with a mustache, whom Gable knew from other polygraph sessions and disliked. "Guy hit bottom 20 years ago, then started digging," Gable said. Dominica knew this was an important test for her, and she willed herself not to read the man, not to get cute, not to play with him. She concentrated on his questions, which drifted, colored, past her cheek. Nate sweated for an hour, then went out to the living room when he heard them wrapping up. Dominica gave him a nod, but Big Fingers didn't bat an eye. They never do. They withhold results till they review the charts, coy as virgins. In the end, Forsythe got him back to the station and sat him down and told him he didn't give a fuck. He wanted a preliminary up or down, because this was important. Fussed, the examiner declared himself satisfied that Dominica was who she said she was, held the rank of corporal in the SVR, and most important, was not a double agent dispatched by the SVR to disinform the CIA, or to identify clandestine service officers, or to elicit current U.S. intelligence requirements. Now a confidant, the examiner did note privately to Forsythe that the charts showed a mild galvanic spike whenever she responded to a question in which the recruiting case officer Nash was mentioned. It required another series of rephrased questions, he said gravely, before he could confirm this was not evidence of classic Czech or Cuban polygraph counter techniques. There had been no controlled breathing, no bunched fists or clenched anus. Gable, when Forsythe related the examiner's comments about Dominica's reaction to Nate, simply said, "orgaspasm," and left the room. With a test result of no deception in their pockets, the operation could move forward, and they had to talk about managing her security, about cover, behavior, comportment, pacing. "You have to keep your profile normal, Lazornish," Forsythe said. "You have to keep reporting your contacts with Nathaniel to the center, keep showing modest progress. Once a month, not so good. Every 2 weeks, every week, better. It's what gives you the freedom to move." "I know I must do this," Dominica said. "I have telegrams already written in my head, from now until winter." "You have to write them on your own," said Forsythe. "We can help you, but they must be your reports, in your words, with your details." Dominica nodded her head. "She knows the game," thought Forsythe. "She's at home with it." "I will paint a picture of Nate. Vain, boastful, but cautious. Easy to manipulate, but suspicious, distracted." She turned to look at Nate, raised an eyebrow.
"Hard to believe it will take you till next winter to figure all that out," said Gable, sitting on the couch next to Nate, who flipped him the middle finger. "I don't know how long we can roll this out. Yasenyevo is going to lose patience sooner or later," said Forsythe. He already was thinking about the day Dominica would be recalled to Moscow. Would she be ready to operate inside? Could they get her ready in time? It would be the calendar that beat them, he thought, not her. "There is one way to prolong the contact, keep my collar loose,"
Something that will persuade Yasenyevo to invest more time, Dominika said. Uncle Vanya expects it.
What is it? Asked Forsythe.
In time, if I report that Nate and I have become lovers, Moscow will be gratified. It will satisfy their expectations. It will make sense to them. They will remember State School 4.
Gable heaved himself up from the couch, a look of pain on his face.
Lovers? Jesus Christ, I couldn't ask anybody to do that with Nash. It's too much.
A blustery Sunday and the little skiffs and day sailors snubbed against the pontoon docks in the inlet. In the safe house, Dominika spoke a little of Marta but stopped and told Nate her news. The monotreme Volontov had recently realized he was without an administrative assistant and solicitously had asked Dominika to assume some admin duties. She wanted to tell him no, to discredit him in the eyes of the center, but she thought now about Nate and Forsythe and Bratok, and had replied that she would be willing to help out. Her gemstone secret was burning deep now. She was learning to look for opportunities to feed her mounting appetite. They gave her Residentura officers' time cards and filing of operational accountings. The latter came with an added benefit. Could Nate guess? Each expense must be referenced to a case report or to an operational telegram describing the activity.
Volontov and his officers should do it themselves, but they just toss everything on my desk, said Dominika. No one but the resident may read others' cables. There is strict razdelyeni, compartmentation.
Dominika's blue eyes blazed. Except that they need me to reference the expenses. She stretched it out. So, Volontov has given me access to the operational traffic. All of it.
The intelligence started coming in bits and pieces, and they watched it, Forsythe firsthand, the arthropods back in Langley long distance, for any false note, anything too pat, too clever. She was prodigious in remembering details, recalling one storyline which triggered another, then another. She began to take cryptic notes. They checked her on it, and she was sound. She memorized nearly the complete text of the Line N reference monthly support activity report, blowing up 3 Line S illegals in Helsinki, sleepers who had lived in Finland as Finns for decades. One had already exited the country at Haparanta as a smokescreen after Marta's disappearance. The other two lived in the nearby municipality of Espoo, but they left them alone to protect Dominika. Next meeting, she scared them when she unfolded an original document plucked out of Volontov's inbox. She had stuffed it crumpled into a pocket instead of taking it to be shredded with the rest of the dross. Sovršenje sekretno. Top secret, from line PR, 4 pages, on the Estonian and Latvian parliaments. They were NATO allies now, so Langley took that intel downtown, to the NSC and the Oval. Gable yelled at her never to do that again. Headquarters agreed with Gable. No more pinching documents. Give her a concealed camera. Nate didn't like it, as risky as it gets, but Forsythe said they had to get her used to it. He thought she could handle it. I'm not sure she's ready for that, said Nate. Any spy gear trebled the risk, and he didn't want the case blowing up, didn't want to put her in any more danger.
Well, you better get her the fuck ready, said Gable. If they call her home tomorrow, the case ends.
Speaking of which, it's time for a little Moscow internal ops training, said Forsythe to Nate. Your specialty.
Dominika's education in denied area tradecraft began. Summer had settled on the peaked roofs and copper domes of Helsinki, and perpetual twilight replaced dusk, and scores of drab Finns rode the escalators down to the metro platforms. Dominika in a scarf, Dominika in a beret, Dominika in a coat, counting the paces, funneling with the crowd toward the turnstile. She got through, and at a corner of the passageway she brushed by him. Through the crimson air she could smell him, feel the sleeve of his sweater as she held a cigarette pack firmly between 2 fingers against her waist. He palmed it, a perfect brush pass, and was gone into the crowd. Summer rain, fresh and light, traffic slow and sluggish, lights reflected off the pavement. She checked her watch by the light of a display case. No tickles behind her, she felt good, and she knew she would hit the timing window. When Nate had described what they were going to do, she had laughed. "We do not resort to such drama," she had told him, and he said, "That's because SVR operates in democracies." And she had huffed but listened carefully. She walked tight beside the granite wall, cars hissing past on the wet street. She turned the corner and stopped in the shadow of a scaffolding in a covered pedestrian walkway. Nate's car had come around the corner at 38 minutes after the hour, random and quick, the car rolling and the passenger side window down, and she stepped off the curb and stuck her hand in the window, letting the plastic bag drop on the seat, and took the replacement cassette from his hand and stepped back under the scaffolding, and he had driven on. He hadn't looked at her, but she had seen his hand pulling on the handbrake. No brake lights, the moving car delivery. Such drama, she thought. They were hitting their stride, all of them, and inevitably the headquarters heat-seeker started circling. She was a controlled asset well-placed inside an SVR residentura, they had written, and they wanted to explore other possibilities. Forsythe kept them off for weeks, but then they made it an order, and Gable wanted to get on a plane and go back there, but Forsythe told him to stop. The madness began. The engineers and the Directorate of Science and Technology wanted D.Va to download the entire residentura computer network, attack the crypto systems, and place audio and video inside the residentura. The S&T techs blithely admitted that some of their devices might, repeat, might, dim the lights of southern Helsinki, and in one instance required D.Va to install a radioactive source on the roof of the Russian embassy. Headquarters then advised that the rule of sixes that governed the development of all new technology would, however, delay deployment of any equipment to the field. R&D for the device would take 6 more years. It would cost an additional $6 million, and, based on breadboard bench testing, one device would weigh 600 pounds. Madness. As the clandestine side of the operation expanded, Nate and Dominika continued their dilatory public contact for Voluntov and the center's benefit. Dinners, trips to the country, concerts. Nate provided personal details about himself, something the center could check independently to illustrate how well Dominika was prying open the oyster. But as Forsythe predicted, Voluntov wanted more and faster progress, so with Gable's enthusiastic assistance, Dominika drafted the much-anticipated contact cable, reporting the beginning of a physical relationship with Nate, to buy more time. Gable wanted to write an erectile dysfunction angle into the script, arguing that would build an even more delay, but a red-faced Forsythe overruled him. Nate flipped Gable the bird. Dominika commenced taking photographs of classified Russian documents from within the residentura, using a variety of concealed cameras installed in purses, key fobs, lipsticks. She was discerning and photographing only the best documents, flexible enough to know when to wait. Gable praised her, but Nate was perpetually worried and gloomy at the risks Dominika was taking. One Sunday afternoon in the safe house, Dominika had heard enough. "Are you worried about me or about this case and your reputation?" she asked. The room fell silent, and Gable cleared his throat. Nate turned slowly toward her, embarrassed and angry. "I'm intent about preserving the intelligence," he said, and watched her face harden. "I just think you should slow down."
"If that's what you think," said Gable, "you're going to love the next round."
The cable from headquarters ran 5 pages. They wanted her to insert a specially prepared thumb drive into a residentura computer, preferably the machine in the file room, but the one under Voluntov's desk would do. 14 seconds of downloading and Langley would be able to access the clear text behind all encrypted point-to-point SVR cables, Yasinyevo Helsinki, transmitted over commercial telephone lines. Reading messages en clair was a lot easier than trying to crack ever-changing encryption algorithms. But this was the riskiest thing yet. Forsythe saw Nate's face and told him to skip the meeting at the safe house. Gable would run her through it. 2 days later, Dominika pushed the wire trolley with the wobbly wheels loaded with files and burn bags and ledgers into the file room. Thank God she could hold on to the thing because her legs were trembling. The file room custodian looked up expectantly, a middle-aged man named Svets, who wore enormous glasses and a wide wool tie that came only to the middle of his belly. He looked forward to watching Igorova replace the files every evening at close of business, especially when she stretched to reach the higher safe drawers. His compound beetle eyes followed her as she horsed the trolley through the door. She had practiced it in pantomime with Gable. He said, "Don't stop, make it flow." She caught the trolley on the corner of the clerk's desk, let it go over, cascading paper across the floor, and Svets got up, all fussed, and she was on her knees beside the desk, and there was the port with a winking green light, and she made sure the pins were the right side up, and felt it go in, and started counting while she kept picking up paper. 9, 10, 11, and Svets was straightening up, and Dominika pointed to another file on the floor in the far corner. 12, 13, 14. Out came the thumb drive, and she was up on her feet, brushing her hair behind her ear, the piece of plastic in her skirt pocket thumping like the telltale heart. She tidied the files and put them back in the drawers, and let him look at her on tiptoe, lifting one foot for effect. 2 hours till the end of day, and every eye seemed on her. Every person seemed to know. Then the lobby and the impatient grumbling line of embassy employees stacked up at the double front doors, beside which was a table with two Volga boatmen behind it. Embassy security with brown clouds around their heads checking purses and pockets. Dear God, random bag check and I picked today. A rivulet of sweat went down her back. She could feel it all the way down, and she was caught in line. She couldn't retreat back upstairs. They watched for that, and she held her coat close in front of her and slipped the thumb drive under the waistband of her skirt and down the front of her underwear. The security man reeked of vodka, and his red eyes knew, had to know, she had the thing in her panties. But he stirred the contents of her purse and slid it to the end of the table and waved her through. She told them about it that night, the adrenaline of the risk still hot in her belly, with Nate standing apart in the door of the little kitchen, and Forsythe listening quietly with his glasses up on his forehead. Gable opened a long neck and tipped it back in one swallow. "I guess now we know why it's called a thumb drive," he said, and pushed past Nate and started making cheese fondue for Christ's sake. Dominika had never tasted it, didn't know what it was. And when it was ready, they sat around the table and dipped bread into the sharp melted cheese, smelling the wine in it, and talked and laughed a little. Forsythe and Gable left after dinner. Nate poured two glasses of wine and they walked into the living room. "What you did today was too risky. I should have never let you try it," said Nate. "It came out all right," said Dominika, turning to face him. "We both know there are risks. Some risks are acceptable, a few of them unavoidable, but most are stupid."
"Stupid? Gloopy."
"Don't worry, Nate," said Dominika. "You won't lose your star spy." The word stupid had lit her fuse. His was already smoldering. "It's just that you should learn to get high on something other than adrenaline," he said. "You mean like wine?" she said, and threw the wine glass against the wall. "No, thank you. I prefer adrenaline." The drip of liquid was the only sound in the room. Nate crowded her and grabbed her arms above the elbows. "What is wrong with you?" he hissed. They glared at each other, their faces inches apart. "What is wrong with you?" she said in a whisper. The room was out of focus for her. Nate was purple and hazy. She looked at his lips, daring him, willing him to come closer. Another second and the moment disappeared into the slipstream. "Please let go of me," she said. And he dropped her arms, and she picked up her coat and without looking at him opened the door, taking the automatic precautionary glances into the hallway and stairwell, then went out, closing it softly behind her. Nate stared at the closed door, his tongue thick in his mouth, his heart pounding in his chest. Jesus, all he wanted was to keep the case running smoothly. All he wanted was to keep her safe. All he wanted. Gable's Cheese Fondue. Reduce white wine and crushed garlic. Add grated Gruyere and Emmentaler cheese. Whisk over a medium heat until melted. Stir in cornstarch slurry, more wine to taste, and reheat, do not boil, until fondue is creamy and thick. Serve with lightly toasted cubed country bread. Chapter 18. Short-sleeve weather now, and Finns on the sidewalk waiting for the pedestrian light to change, all had their faces turned to the sun like sunflowers, eyes closed. The broad lawns and benches of Caivo Puisto were dotted with lunchtime secretaries sunbathing in their bras, chins up, drinking in the light. The note was taped to his door, and Nate walked into Forsythe's office and sat down. Gable was sitting on the couch. Forsythe handed him the short headquarters cable announcing the availability of the new director of the CIA, recently confirmed, to travel incognito from Copenhagen to Helsinki for 6 hours for a controlled meet-and-greet with D.Va to express the agency's appreciation for her service so far. Nate looked up at Forsythe, and then over at Gable. "How can he travel incognito?" asked Nate. "He was all over the news." "He'll be in Copenhagen for the NATO thing," added Forsythe. "How he'll slip away from the Danes beats the hell out of me. Alan Dulles used to do this. Angleton, too. Get on a plane, not tell anyone, show up unannounced." "Yeah, in fucking 1951, said Gable. "And those guys traveled solo, and you walked down the steps of the Constellation across from the tarmac into a taxi, and checked into a hotel by signing the register. Those pillbox hats on the stewardesses, though." Forsythe ignored him. "I sent a polite no-thank-you response last night, and Chief Europe called me on the green line half an hour later and chewed my ass. Not a request. Director wants to get involved." "There's another inflated balloon, fucking Chief Europe," said Gable. "Thinks he's a ship's captain at Trafalgar. Ever read his Christmas benediction to the troops?" Forsythe continued to ignore him. "We can control things only from the minute he gets off the plane. VIP gate, drive him around, dry clean him, stash his security guys in a van downstairs, get him up there, shake her hand, then get him out. Just pray FAPSI, Russian SIGINT service, doesn't pick up his flight plan." Forsythe looked at the cable again. "They must have briefed D.Va to him recently. Well, at least it's good PR for the case." "PR? He's going to get her killed," said Nate. "It'd be safer for us to put her in a car trunk and run her over to Sweden for a long weekend. Why don't we tell him she's not available?" "No," said Forsythe. "Tell him she refuses." "No. Get her primed, tell her to smile. Those blue eyes will do the rest. Let's get some food up there, some drinks." "A bug-out car parked close," said Gable. "What about Dominica?" asked Nate. "Who eats the shit sandwich if something goes wrong?" "You do," said Gable and Forsythe. Footsteps on the landing and the door opened and Dominica stood up as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency shrugged off his coat and came across the room and pumped her hand up and down, saying how glad he was to meet her, then pumped Nate's hand too, told him he was doing a great job with this young lady, a beaming smile in her direction, and they both could be proud of what they were doing for the United States. Dominica tilted her head a little at that, and they sat down, Dominica and the director on the couch, and he opened the charm spigot from his legislative days, and he tapped her knee to make a point, and sometimes his hand stayed on her knee, a habit from the Senate cloakroom and the pages. He was tall and thin and squirrel-eyed with sunken cheeks and shiny hair dyed black. Dominica decided he looked like Koshi, the mythological evildoer her father used to read to her about when she was a little girl. Dominica looked hard at him, but his aura was faint, a pale green glow around his face and ears. Green, zelenej, emotional, not what he appears to be, an actor, thought Dominica. So different from Uncle Vanya, but the same. Different services, the same yasharitsya, the same lizard. He was asking Forsythe about the operational ambient in Scandinavia, and they all knew that was nothing to be discussing in front of an agent, so she got up and brought out a plate of pelmeni, steaming dumplings just fished out of the pot, stuffed with savory ground meat and spices, slathered with sour cream. Dominika had insisted on making something, a Russian way to honor the guest. Nate thought they should have served dry crackers and warm cream soda. "Quite excellent," said the director, clotted sour cream at the corner of his mouth. The director wiped his lips and patted the cushion so Dominika would sit back down beside him. Nate and Gable and Forsythe sat in chairs close by, angled to watch Dominika to give her support while the director asked where she was from, as if to check if she were a constituent. Gable thought of long ago and desperate late nights in stinking hotel rooms with sweating agents, little men running unspeakable risks, spinning up their nerve to go out again, intently listening to Gable speaking slowly and without pause, watching his face, pouring the vodka, or the Mai Tai, or the Arak. That was long ago. Here, in the sun-splashed apartment, they were having a jolly old agent meeting. For a Russian, talking about future success is inviting bad luck. Better to shut up about it. The director moved closer to Dominika, but she didn't lean away. Good show, thought Nate. She would know how to handle that, wouldn't she? The director was saying that they all applauded her efforts, that he was taking a personal interest in her activities, and that she would not hesitate to contact him directly at any time of the day or night. Nate was tempted to ask for his home telephone number in Bethesda. Forsythe read his thoughts and scraped his chair to tell him to shut the fuck up. Bottle green and prattling, Director Kashi was saying something about a covert bank account. A sum of money had been put in the account for Dominika as a recruitment bonus. More money would be deposited each month. The account was completely under her control, but of course withdrawals and profligate spending were inadvisable. He continued that additional funds would be deposited when she began work in Moscow. Dominika looked up at Nate and turned to look at Forsythe. Both their faces were expressionless. Kashi continued remorselessly. At the end of 2 years internal service in Moscow, he droned, an additional bonus of $250,000 would be deposited in her account. Finally, on the mutually agreed-upon date of her retirement from the service, the CIA would resettle her in the West, in a location selected with her security in mind, and would provide her with a retirement home of not less than 3,000 square feet. The room was quiet. Dominika's face had changed, and she looked at each of them, then turned back to the visitor. She smiled her incandescent smile. Nate thought, oh, fuck. "Sir, thank you for coming such a long way to meet me," said Dominika. "I have told Mr. Forsythe and Mr. Gable and Mr. Nash," she gestured to each of them as she mentioned them, "that I am committed to helping your service any way I can. I am committed to trying to help my country, to help Russia. I appreciate all you have offered me, but please excuse me. I am not doing this for money." She looked evenly at this Nikoturny scarecrow. "Of course you're not," said Kashi, patting her knee, "although we all realize how useful money can be." "Yes, sir, you are right," said Dominika. Nate saw she was upset. There was a flush at her collarbones. Forsythe saw it too. Gable started gathering coats, moving around the room. "Mr. Director, we unfortunately have to spend another half hour driving out of here before getting you back to the plane," said Forsythe, getting to his feet. "Fine, fine," he said. "It's been a pleasure meeting you, Dominique. You're a courageous woman, running terrible risks." "Jesus, tell her how long she has to live," thought Nate. "Remember," the director said, giving her a hug, his arm across her chest, "call me any time in case of need." "Yeah, so we can take you by the hand and lead you across the plowed strip at the border wire between the bounding anti-personnel mines and 2 minutes ahead of the dogs," thought Gable. Forsythe bundled Kashi into his coat and hat, while Gable went downstairs to alert the security detail. The director followed. Forsythe stopped at the door and winked. "Talk to you soon," he said, and disappeared. Dominika and Nate stood in the doorway of the apartment like newlyweds saying goodbye to a grumpy uncle who had come to Sunday dinner. Nate softly closed the door. The safe house was dead still. They could hear car doors chunking, then the sound of them driving away. "Well," said Nate, "did you like the director?" It was twilight, and running lights ghosted along the inlet, and happy voices came over the water through the open window. Two glasses of wine stood untouched on the table as they sat in the dark, Dominica on the couch, Nate in a chair. The ambient light caught her hair and the eyelashes on her right eye. She had worn a summery dress for the day, tight in the bodice with heels, like for a job interview. She didn't feel like talking, and Nate didn't know what to say, worried that their arguments and now this visit had broken her back, that she was going to tell him she was backing out. Nate was her handling officer. It was his responsibility to keep the case going. Fuck, he thought. Lots of pitches get turned down. Agents are lost in this CI grinder. There's bad luck or bad timing. You miss a train by 30 minutes and it changes everything. But who loses an agent because she thinks we're all shitheels? He could imagine the heads bent forward in the headquarters cafeteria. Yeah, it was Nash in Helsinki. Hall file was right after all, usually is. Langley would cable, time for a CONUS tour. Sit a spell, let's talk about your future. His father would write, welcome home, son, all is forgiven. A pitch-black mine shaft, steep and airless. He registered that she stood up and was walking toward him. The dark room affected her, a cocoon, invisible. She didn't know, but she stood in front of him, looking down at him. The usual deep purple of his background was there, and strangely, she could feel a heat emanating from him, still and steady. She knew he was suffering, the too serious professional, worried about the equilibrium of his career. But there was vulnerability under the professional seriousness. Whatever he thought about her personally, she wasn't sure. His fretting and worry were endearing. She realized that she herself was feeling the strain, living constantly with the ice-cold secret. Goaded by anger at first, she had fallen into her new role, a different role. She had pushed herself for the Americans because she trusted them. They cared for her. They were professionals. But especially for Nate. Part of what Dominica was doing was for him, she realized. If he had asked her, she would have told him she had no thought of quitting. She was determined and focused. But right now she needed something more than the rush of deception, of the knowledge that her will was stronger than all others, that she was besting the Gray Cardinals. She needed to be needed. By him. She could feel her secret self open the hurricane room door and step outside. Dominica put her hands on the arms of Nate's chair, bent over and kissed him on the lips. She hadn't foreseen this. She knew he certainly had not. In her service, as well as his, Dominica knew it was zaprashenye, strictly forbidden to become physically involved with an agent. Emotional complications are death to a clandestine operation. It's not for no reason they whisk the sparrow from the room after the honey trap and Uncle Sasha takes over, all business, because passions get in the way. You can't get anywhere with an agent who is thinking about his cooey. The old instructors used to say, cackling and trying to get her to blush. She was in his arms, kissing him, not frantically, but slowly, softly. His lips were warm, and she wanted to drink them in. She felt a pressure building in her body, inside her skull and her breasts, between her legs. His hands pressed on her back, and she felt sweet and edgy, as if they were childhood friends who years later had discovered each other as adults. He breathed deep purple heat into her ear, and she felt it down her spine. Dominica, he said, wanting to slow down. They had argued days before. It was folly to become involved like this. The stability of the case required. Zamochi, she whispered. Shut up, you fool. And she brushed her lips along his cheek and held him tighter. His head was spinning, from indecision, from alarm, from an unbidden lust growing in his guts. Nate knew he wanted her. It was insane, reckless, forbidden. He couldn't remember what happened next. They were naked and feverish in the little bedroom, and Dominica raked her nails lightly between his legs to make him follow her. She thought she must have just invented a new come-along technique, and they were climbing ridiculously over the footboard onto the bed, wedged between the bedroom walls. She kept her hand on him, fixing her fingernails a little tighter, and she laughed, her mouth dry with desire. Feeling his skin for the first time, trailing her lips across his stomach, was unreal and dizzying. He looked at her in surprise, and she pushed him back, her hand on his chest. Prurient and tender and shy and slutty, she tasted him and savored the mouthful of him, and it was as if they had been lovers since forever. There was never a thought of Sparrow School or numbered techniques. Dominica simply wanted him. It was becoming more urgent. Her secret self was expanding and filling her head and constricting her throat, and just in time Nate blessedly flipped her on her back, and she pointed her quivering toes at the ceiling, and the light of a bloated moon rising over the harbor islands came through the window and got in her eyes. She was night-blind and moon-blind, and Nate was only a silhouette above her, then a crushing weight. Dominica felt a sudden, excruciatingly sweet expansion, and the moonlight was rocketing around behind her eyelids, and she hoped he could keep her heaving body from blowing away like a piece of paper. She felt the hollow rush expand inside her, and then a rogue wave rose up from the deep, bigger than the others, hanging, curling, and she said, "Bosh moi," from way back in her throat, and a white-eyed state of grace rolled through her like the wind bends a wheat field. They lay side by side in the crushing moonlight. Dominica waited for her thighs to stop quivering before turning to look at his moon-wet body. "Dushka, you are very good at agent handling," she whispered. The night air had not yet dried their bodies when they heard a key turn in the lock of the safe house door, and they rocketed out of bed, and Nate pulled on shirt and pants and shoes. Dominica grabbed a handful of clothes and ran into the bathroom. Nate walked into the living room to see Gable in the kitchen, leaning into the open refrigerator.
"Thought I'd come back to do damage control after the director's tour de force performance," said Gable.
He turned back to look into the refrigerator.
"Any more of those dumplings left?"
"On the bottom shelf," said Nate.
"Yeah, I talked to Dominica about all that shit. Think she understands the diff between us and the suits?" "I was laughing my ass off when she got pissed at the old peacock. She's got spirit," Gable said.
He put a container of dumplings on the counter.
"So you calmed her down okay?" he asked.
"Yes, Bratok," said Dominica, coming out of the bathroom. "I am calm now." She was completely dressed, hair combed, and features composed. Nate watched Gable's face. "Let me reheat the pelmeni for you," said Dominica. She lit the burner, rattled a pan. "They are best the second time," she said, "especially like this." She poured the boiled dumplings into the skillet with butter and fried them until lightly brown on all sides. "But now this way they are best with vinegar," she said. The deadly domestic prattle continued as they stood around the kitchen counter eating out of bowls. No one spoke, and Gable occasionally looked from Dominica to Nate and back again. Nate studiously looked at his food, but Dominica returned Gable's look, unperturbed, reading the bloom around his head. Finished eating, Gable ran water in the sink as Dominica put on her coat and said goodnight. She didn't look back at Nate, and she went down the stairway. Nate closed the door, turning with dread to face Gable, who was walking to the living room couch with two glasses held between his fingers, a bottle of scotch in the other hand.
"Well, Priapus," said Gable, setting the glasses down on the table, "run your fingers around the rims while I get the ice."
Pelmeni dumplings. Roll 2-inch disks of wafer-thin dough made from flour, egg, milk, and salt. Mix ground beef, ground pork, minced chicken, grated onion, pureed garlic, and water. Place a dot of filling in center of each disc, moisten edges, fold closed, and crimp. Bring bottom corners together, pinching to attach. Boil in salted boiling water until dumplings float to the surface. Serve with sour cream. Chapter 19.
"It got away from you?" said Forsythe, leaning over his desk.
You are handling, by headquarters reckoning, one of the most promising Russian cases in the operations directorate in the last decade, and you lack the discipline to stay out of her bed?
Chief,